Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden Show, brought to you by who?
By America CitizenPress.com, Denver Cenogenics, and Dr. Julie McCallum, and a great landscaping company, HappyTrees.co. Yeah, what happened? Sorry about that little glitchy thing there. Right as they started playing the introduction, our Zoom went away. I mean, it just like shut down. And then a little
Julie's
theme came
fault.
Up. Yeah, it was my fault. No, it was Zoom's fault. They said, Zoom said, oh, your Zoom call was accidentally interrupted. Do you want to report? I'm like, no, we just want to get back on the air. So anyway, here we are. I blame
dirty trick operators.
That's right. Hey, a lot to talk about today. Welcome to the show, everybody. At 3:30, we're going to have Robert Marks on. This should be pretty interesting. It's a little bit not political, at least not too much, but he's got a new book out called Non-Computable You. It's about artificial intelligence. And there's been some recent whistleblowers, I guess, right, from Google saying that they believe that Google's artificial intelligence has become sentient. And this guy
means it can think.
Means it can take over Joe Biden's office,
yeah,
for sure. But
yeah,
anyway, so we're going to talk to him about that. But first, you know, the day before primary day, lots of news today. More good news out of the Supreme Court.
They ruled that Coach Kennedy can kneel down and pray at the 50-yard line after games. They were saying
The school board had fired him.
And the three liberal justices said, he has no right to be able to pray. That's obscene.
Yeah.
Did they allow that in Roman times? No, they didn't allow that in Roman times.
And the Neil Gorsuch from Colorado wrote the, I guess, a majority opinion. So we can talk about that.
Well, there's another interesting one came from the Fifth Circuit, which is New Orleans. They had ruled 2-1 that the Biden administration could require people to take federal vaccines. Yeah, that the employees who were complaining should go through the civil administration process, which of course would take years and no good. Normally, when you get a bad opinion, you have a very short period of time to ask for a ruling en banc, meaning instead of just three justices or three judges, you get all 17, which is the case of there. And just today, they said,
Never mind.
Well, we're going to reconsider the whole thing. We'll have the 17 judges.
By
the way, the preliminary injunction, which was dissolved because of our prior decision, that's back in.
So, I mean, that's good news, right? I think as more and more news comes out about COVID, it's not an emergency. The vaccines don't work. And in fact, there might be a lot of harmful impacts from the vaccines. At least there's some evidence suggesting
that. Well, maybe
that
some conservative judges in the
sick.
The Fifth Circuit kind of went, hey, if the Supreme Court can do it, we can do it.
And that's something I want to talk about too, is just there is this sort of awakening by conservatives, which I think is very good. But in general, I wanted to start out talking about the Colorado primary vote is tomorrow. Some interesting information came out today. Associated Press had done a survey of all the states, and they found that in 43 states that there are roughly about a million more people had become Republicans, had switched their
They took about 1,000,007 ballots, and 600,000 or close to 700,000 had been Democrat, but well over a million had gone Republican. So it was a massive gain for Republicans. And apparently in the suburbs, they even cited in the article Larimer County. So maybe it's also true in Colorado. It was hilarious. At the same time that was coming out, CNN had a little panel discussion, S.E. Cupp saying, Republicans are dead. This is it over. They represent no one, just a few retrograde, regressive bullshit stuff. And it's all over for the Republicans.
Well, it's interesting. And you know what? Feel free to comment. If you're on Zoom, comment, because we don't have a guest till 3:30. If you want to call in, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And if you're on Zoom and you want to go ahead and comment, not just in the comment section, but just unmute yourself, and you can either just use your audio or come on with the camera too. I think what was interesting was the Associated Press indicated that they were hearing, when they talked to people, the same thing that essentially Bill Maher has been saying lately, mm-hmm. right? And that is the Democratic Party has gone cuckoo. They're crazy anymore. And they were quoting people in Larimer County, two people, as saying, and they said those were the kind of suburbs that the Democrats were previously sort of Democrat strongholds, were no longer Democrat strongholds, and people were shifting to the Republican Party saying, hey, it's not that I'm crazy about Republicans.
I'm not sure Larimer County is considered a suburb, but maybe it is.
Well, Fort Collins, it's a suburb, metro, it's a Front Range suburb, a suburban areas, and they were calling it a medium suburban area. They said you have some major suburban areas, right, like I maybe some around Chicago, and this is like a medium suburban area.
Well, Westminster's probably a medium suburban
area. Right, and they were just...
Well, probably a big one.
Right? And they were saying, essentially, though, that the people there were saying the same as Bill Maher has been saying, and that is the Democratic Party has lost them. Like, the Democrat Party doesn't stand for anything, I believe. They don't, you know, I used to think this too, right? The Democrats stood for the working person, the middle class, and it's far from that anymore. So we'll see.
They mentioned, always was far from that.
Well, I know, but now they don't even pretend anymore. There was some indication, and I wanted to kind of shift in talking to this about the Democrat meddling, because play the Project Veritas thing. They said that, yes, there are signs that there are Democrats who have switched their affiliation to unaffiliated or Republican in order to vote in Republican primaries and try to interfere with what would be, I guess, fair election results. But they said that the shift that they've seen, that it's bigger than that. Right. That's not enough to explain that. So,
well, here in Adams County, it's an incredible race between Lori Sane,
CD8,
which is Weld and Adams. But it's Lori Sane, Barbara Kirkmeyer, and Jan Kuhlman. And it's been the dirtiest race I've seen on behalf of Kirkmeyer, who really deserves not to get elected to anything in her life. Here's one of her mailers. Liberal Lori Sane, and never Trumper, everything else. And he's elect a conservative Barbara Kirkmeyer.
And I'm just laughing because the opposite is true.
And then this is a letter from our old friend Jesse Mallory,
American for Prosperity,
the Koch brother. And he says, beware of dirty tricks, because Lori Sane is too liberal, is too conservative to be elected in CD8. She's too much of a conservative. So the Democrats are trying to get you to vote for a conservative who can't be elected, as opposed to Barbara Kirkmeyer, who's a conservative who lies a lot, who can be elected. I mean, they sent it to the same address, one saying,
she's
Lori
too liberal,
Sane,
the other one, she's too conservative.
And then
she's
too, so I mean, you know, talk about a mixed message. You know, why do politicians lie so much? Because it works.
Well, yeah.
So I'm really hoping lying on her part, because she doesn't deserve to be part of anything. I mean,
Barbara Kirkmeyer. Yeah,
Barbara Kirkmeyer.
Well, you know,
the
race is heating up. I was today, I'm going for a run, and I ran into a former freelance photographer. Well, he's still a freelance photographer. I saw setting up up in here in Legacy Ridge, and which is in CD8. And I'm like, Shane Anthony, he's a great guy. I'm like, what are you doing up here? And he said he was freelancing for Fox Network, mm-hmm. And the news program, not like one of the talk shows. And he said they were doing a story on CD8, and this was smack dab in CD8. So that's where they were doing it. And I'm like, I mean, he was a photographer. He was like doing the live shots. He's like, I don't really know anything else about it. This is just where I was at. But obviously it's getting national attention the day before.
What's also getting national attention is our Secretary of State race, with the amazing, Pam Anderson, who's really a Democrat, helped the Zuckerberg dollars and everything else, and Peggy, who is...
You mean Pam Anderson? Chuck!
No, Pam Anderson is really a Democrat.
And she's running against Tina Peters.
Tina Peters, Peggy. Tina Peters. And the New York Times did a story yesterday on it. CNN did a story yesterday on it. Vox has done a story. Saloon has done a story. So that means one thing. That means that Tina Peters is up in some polls, because they normally would not bother bringing in the New York Times and hit pieces and everything else on a obscure Secretary of State race.
So
that's really good news that they're that scared of Tina Peters.
Right. Let me, from Dr. Donna, does she and Barbara Kirkmeyer even know Laura? Yes, I do. I believe they do know each other. I think they've been, you know, in Weld County politics, right, and they kind of switched, right? Lori Sane was in, yes, the legislature. Barb Kirkmeyer was on the county commissioner seat, and now they've gone the other
Barbara
way.
Barbara Kirkmeyer, when she was at the thing, got from the Liberty scorecard an F. Lori Sane got an A.
An A.
So you know who the conservative is, and you know who the two-faced phony is.
And then Dr. Donna saying maybe he, Jesse Mallory, was part of the dark money behind Barbara getting elected in the first place.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
he
I
was.
Think the Koch brothers are there. Well, what's interesting is, you know, one of the things going back to, because I've been kind of saying all day, that's very good news about the GOP registration going up. It says a lot.
It says everything.
But on the other hand, though, I think we have to be ever vigilant now, because the Democrats get that their ideas can't win. We saw what they did in 2020. More evidence is coming out about that all the time. And don't for a second think they're not going to just step it up, right? They're not going to say, oh, well, I guess we just don't win this cycle, right? They're not saying, well, I guess it's just going to be a red wave. What can we say? They're going to step up everything even more. I think we're going to see more election corruption, more election meddling. And if you think that's not true, Project Veritas got some, has a new investigation out today. And this is some audio from a South Carolina state representative. So this isn't just some nut job off in the woods somewhere saying this stuff. This is a state representative, Crystal Matthews, who's also running for U.S. Senate, also in jail, which is odd, by the way, out of South Carolina. And basically, she's talking about what we've been talking about the Democrats doing, and that is running Democrats, specifically not people who are rhinos, not even that. These are people who are Democrats saying that they are now Republicans so that they can go ahead and run in races and then vote Democrat. Thomas, if we could please play the Dem sleepers video.
They're sleepers. Like, we need them to run as the other side, even though they're for our side. And we need them to win.
Right.
We need people to run as Republicans in these local elections. And this is the only way you're going to change the dynamics in South Carolina. We can battle them in public all day. As long as we know we're working for the same goal, for me,
right,
I feel like, y'all, we need sleepers. When we get enough of us in there, we can wreak havoc for real from the inside out. Then we can flip some from the inside out. We got to take back some of these seats, especially in these local elections. We need a group of sleepers. And I still got to struggle to raise money for my campaign. Where the f*** is my black people with money? I don't care about no dope money. Give me that dope boy money. Where the duffel bag boys? Find you somebody in your family that don't even know you donating to my campaign and put that shit under their name. Honestly, these ain't the same type of black people that I grew up around. I don't recognize these black people. So because I don't understand the type of black that they are. Now, can I talk intelligently? Can I could do, listen, I can move in all kinds of circles, but I'm a her. I love black people. I feel safest around my people. I'm very much a in a lot of ways, but I know how to turn it off and turn it on. You know, I know how to be in certain spaces. You know, you gotta be able to turn it off and turn it on. We need some folks that can wear all black at night and take their yard signs down when they sleeping. We ain't gotta make a bunch of noise about it. We ain't gotta go live about it. Just don't say shit. Just like when somebody drop money and you pick it up. You pick that up and keep walking.
Okay, so that's the state representative there. I mean, let's talk about all the criminal things that you talked about. Let's take dope money, then donate money in other people's campaigns, run around and take out yard signs and things like that, right? But the biggest thing she was saying, the only way to change the dynamics in South Carolina is to go ahead and have Democrats run as Republicans and then wreak havoc, as she said, from the inside.
And they have done that in Georgia. Georgia's one, and there they don't vote by party, so any Democrat can vote for Kemp and all that. And they do it here in Colorado. When we went around, we were amazed by how many party chairmen were actually former Democrats that said, I've converted now. And we've got people like this, you know, Americans for Prosperity, who purport to be pro American values, and they're not. They're for illegal immigration. They're for everything you could possibly. And that's Barbara Kirkmeyer. I just hope, people see through Jesse and Barbara Kirkmeyer and the rest of them. As I said, politicians lie because it works.
Well, and here's more evidence of the meddling. In Colorado, I was looking at the early voting. So, I mean, anymore, we just have your whole shows where Chuck was right. Chuck and Peg Cage and Anil Mathai and Ben Nicholas and Joe, and you guys who travel around the state saying, guys, we cannot have an open primary, right? It's going to destroy us. Well, it's exactly what's happening. So in Colorado, number one, they said there are a lot of people. So this is to bear in mind. And I think a lot of Republicans, especially, are holding onto their ballot and voting tomorrow, right? I voted Friday. You're voting tomorrow on election day, right? I just think there are a lot of people doing that right now, or I guess as of Friday, about 12% of the eligible voters had actually gone ahead and voted, right? Of the unaffiliated voters, 38% were voting Republican, had returned Republican ballots. 32% had returned, of the unaffiliated people, had returned Democrat ballots, okay? This, though, is what's going. So it's hard to tell how many of those, because the Democrats have been making a concerted push in Colorado to have their people unaffiliate and then vote and meddle in the Republican primaries. That's why we're seeing flyers like this. And in CD3, where Lauren Boebert is there, the Democrats concede she probably can be reelected, right? But they've got Don Quorum, who's running against her, who might be one of those sleeper people.
Well, he's voted for every union teacher bill in the state Senate, so he might as well be a Democrat.
He's challenging her. So they've had 4,000 Democrats in CD3 since the beginning of the year have changed their ballot to unaffiliated. Now, is 4,000, and there's only one reason that, well, I submit to you that not all of them, in fact, the vast majority of them, not all of them are people who say, I just don't like the Republican Party anymore. I'm going to become unaffiliated. I don't like the Democrat Party anymore. I'm going to become unaffiliated. Maybe some, but the Democrats have been openly doing editorials, openly calling for people.
They'll go back to being Democrats after
the election. In the general election. So I don't know. Is 4,000 enough to swing it, do you think?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, there are lots of elections been won or lost by a great deal less than 4,000 votes. So could they swing? Yeah, they could.
So that's exactly what we're seeing here is the Democrat meddling. They're meddling by pretending.
And Lauren Boebert deserves it because she did no help for us when we tried to close the primary. None. She just.
In fact, the articles are now citing you guys. I was reading a story in Colorado Newsline, and it was talking about the turnout, and it was talking about the fact that Democrats are openly meddling.
Right.
The Democrats are changing their affiliation to unaffiliated, specifically to vote for who they think could be a losing Republican candidate, right? That's a strategy because they know their ideas aren't winning. And they said that a group of, they called you far right, Colorado Republicans actually had a lawsuit. They said, this is exactly what they said would happen.
Yeah, it was exactly what we said would happen.
And so, you know, to close the primary, they said that this would happen, and indeed it is happening. You know, and I don't know what you do. To me, we could probably move on a little bit, but just really, it's like, wake up, Colorado Republicans, wake up, Colorado Republican Party. If you let this continue to happen, wake up other states, right? The Democrats are like, hey, you know,
it's happening in every state. Up in Wyoming, the Republicans in the legislature tried to close their primaries to Democrats, and the liberal Republicans, the moderates, the same as establishment Republicans here, prevented it. So they could hope that they could get Liz Cheney reelected again.
Right.
I mean, just
and it turns out people hate her so much that there are not enough Democrats in in Wyoming to get Liz Cheney to make a difference. But I think it'll be very interesting to see how tomorrow turns out. And again, I submit, when you look at the fact that people are saying, some of the people who are changing, right? I'm not necessarily pro some of this Republican things, but I definitely want a change. The Democrats aren't doing it. We need to have some other leadership in there. The Democrats don't represent me anymore. I think all of these people who say, oh, a Tina Peters can't win. Oh, a Ron Hanks can't win. Oh, a Lori Sane can't win. I think that they might be mistaken.
And well, I think they're terrified they can win.
Right, exactly. So it's going to be very interesting tomorrow. And Jenna Griswold already putting out stuff saying, remember, Colorado elections are not over on election day. Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
You think?
Until you crook it.
That's right. Because she has all her newfound powers where she has to certify everybody, everything. I mean, there's a reason she's putting that out there. I just worry about that too, right?
When
she's saying, I mean, since when are Colorado elections not determined on election day? You know, that's kind of a whole new thing the Democrats are doing too, because because they're like, we need to see how much we need to change it to get it there. So that's kind of interesting news. I wanted to talk a little bit before we get Professor Marks on about some of the Supreme Court stuff that's going on. Because I think...
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a really interesting article which said that, you know, the majority of people, 5 of the 7 people who voted for Roe v. Wade back in 73 were appointed by Republican presidents. The revision to Roe v. Wade, which reestablished the right to an abortion, but on different ones, Casey, you know, the majority of the people who voted for that were Republicans. So it's been for decades that Republicans appointed justices who've wanted to appeal to the media. They wanted to be liked by the media.
They wanted to go to the fun cocktail parties in D.C.
And finally, only because of Donald Trump, we've actually got a 6-3 majority. You would have thought for sure they would have gone along with Roberts, who wanted to say, look, let's just say that Mississippi's okay, but not overturn Roe. And Thomas said, no, hell with you, buddy. No, it's a bad decision, badly decided, and we're overturning it. So finally, somebody said Republicans are learning how to win, and you don't win with establishment hacks.
Well, and Republicans are like, go ahead, protest outside my house, right? Right. It's, I mean, you're going to do that anyway. It's like, you know, what's the latest thing Democrats are outraged about and trying to cancel the day, right?
What was that one you said? They say, the Democrats were as outraged as I've seen them since yesterday.
That's why that Donald Trump Jr. was talking about that. They haven't been this outraged since yesterday at this time. I mean, but let's look at what the Supreme Court did. And I'm going to say this. I think on the abortion issue, both sides are kind of missing what I consider to be the key thing there. And that is that the court, they weren't saying abortions are good or abortions are bad. They're saying that abortions are not a constitutional federal issue. They said that's the kind of question. There's nothing in the Constitution that says anything about abortion. That's the kind of thing that belongs with the states. And I think that is huge for a court to do that. And likewise, they've said with the gun issue, right? They said, you know, the Second Amendment is pretty clear on certain things. And no, you can't have states like New York just kind of willy-nilly imposing essentially impossible restrictions on it.
Well, basically, they're saying is this right is enumerated in the Second Amendment, which is the right to bear arms. And this isn't enumerated, which is right to have an abortion.
Right, exactly. And then on top of that, then with the coach, and this poor guy's been, this has been going on since 2015, right? The coach, what he did is he had previously said, okay, no, I'm not going to talk about religion before the game. I'm not going to say a prayer with the team. I'm not going to do any of that stuff. But after the game, he took a knee. After the game was over, and it was over, right?
Yeah, in the middle of the field.
He went to the middle of the field and took a knee. No different than you see athletes many times. You see them cross their face and go right, like this after a home run or something like that,
too.
Right? Well, yeah. And then the school district there, clearly they didn't like him. And they said, well, you know, that violated essentially the separation of church and state,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court said, no, it didn't. And in fact, this guy has an absolute right, First Amendment right and a right to religious freedom, right, to go ahead and do that if he wants. And what did the Sotomayor said, well, what if Satanists wanted to go? And I suppose that the Supreme Court would say if some Satanist wanted after the game and everything was over to go there and make whatever satanic gesture he wanted, he could do that too, or she could do that too. I mean, and you know what? They can in this country. I agree with that absolutely, right? And that's, the Democrats have tried for so long to social engineer us through the courts, and they are freaking out that the courts are now like, yeah, we're going to actually stand up now and say, we're not going to social engineer that.
And right? We're not going to let the New York Times and the mainstream media beat us up so much. And I think, you know, Clarence Thomas found out what the media was like when he got accused of harassing and sexually abusing somebody. And of course, so did Kavanaugh, and they both know, and anybody else who cares knows it's just garbage. And so maybe they went, you know, I don't think I'm going to bow down to these people.
Well, and I would say, again, and a lot of that, you know, as we get into the election, should it be Donald Trump? Shouldn't be Donald Trump running in 2024? I would just say this, that I think this country really, if it survives the Democrats and the Biden administration, owe a debt of gratitude to Donald Trump that can't be overstated. I think on a number, look what he did with the Supreme Court here, right? Look what he did with the economy. When Barack Obama was telling us all, we got to get used to it. No, your kids are not going to be better off than you. Everything's going to suck from now on. Just get used to it, right? And Donald Trump came along and he said, make America great again. Oh, and guess what? He did, right? And in the meantime, I read an article, and I think there's some truth to it. And it was saying, whether you like Donald Trump or not, Donald Trump is about one thing, and that is winning. And the way he won was not to extend olive branches, was not to do this or that, but the way he won was to fight, right? And I think that's what he showed Republicans. You don't have to be like Mitt Romney. You don't have to be like Mitch McConnell. You don't have to be like Liz Cheney. You don't have to go along to get along anymore. So, you know, you can be invited to the Washington, D.C. cocktail parties.
Dr. Donna says, where does it say separation of church and state in the Constitution? And it doesn't.
No, okay.
It says the establishment clause, which is you should not establish religion or infringe upon the religious rights of others. And then later sometime, I don't know, 50 years later, the phrase separation between church and state.
Thank you, Dr. Donna. You're right about that. But again, and that's what the Supreme Court Justice has said, is this isn't violating that. He's not forcing this on anyone, right? He's not requiring anybody to do this. And again, you know, the Democrats have confused their supposed right to not, it's not even not to be offended anymore, but to have somebody think or say something differently than what they want to say and think. And all of a sudden, that's like, that's illegal. It's against the law to do that. And so the Supreme Court, I think, is going back, and hopefully will keep us going back to a place where it's like, hey, we can disagree. I can kneel on the field and do, you know, the sign of the cross. You can kneel on the field at the end and do whatever you want to do, a hippity hop, you know, that's okay. That's what this country is about. And we live and let live, but we don't say, hey, I don't agree with you. So you can't even talk. You can't be canceled. And on top of that, you have to be fired.
Well, that's what they do. They have no tolerance for anything or anybody other than themselves. So it's going to be an interesting time if the conservatives start growing some cojones. Maybe we'll fight back and take things back rather than having the Barbara Kirkmeyers and the others who want to pretend they're conservatives, but really are just left wing. Moderates at best.
Well, and I think it's, there you go. It gets all back to, it's all about power again too, right?
Well, it's always about
power. And again, like I started out the show talking about, I think we have to be careful. The Democrats' backs are against the wall. They aren't, I guess, and I would say, the little gnomes in whatever city they live in, New York City, who run the Democrat Party, the strategists. Remember when the Time magazine did that story about all the global elites where they had the meeting and they said, hey, we got to make sure we win the election.
Right.
And they did. The Mark Zuckerbergs, the Jeff Bezos, all the billionaires, you know, the international corporations. They aren't just sitting there saying, oh, well, I guess that didn't work very well, right?
No, it worked out great.
For Donald Trump, right? And they're not sitting there saying, I guess people don't like us. Biden isn't popular. People are becoming Republicans. They're going to be like, so, again, like that, the state representative in South Carolina said, you know, we can't change the dynamic in South Carolina legitimately, right? So the only way we can do it is to go ahead and have people who are actual Democrats pretend to be Republicans, run as Republicans, and then get in there.
And that's what happened in Weld County.
Right.
And that's how people, Barbara Kirkmeyer, got elected in the first place to the state legislature.
Right. Hey, and TJ, if you want to go ahead and call Professor Marks now, that would be okay too. Just some of the comments from Sandra. It's obvious that giving Democrats anything never works because they are never satisfied and always want more and more. Exactly, Sandra. I say never give them anything again. They can GTH. And then Dr. Donna says Murdoch money. Yeah, well, exactly. That's the money that's, you know, it's funding. It's Catherine Murdoch, who's very liberal, very much into climate change, openly funding Republican races to help the moderate person win. And that's, you know, now again, you look at the people who are the Democrats have gotten smart. They don't have primaries, right? No. So, and that's by design, guys. They don't have, so they create an open primary system. Then they make sure that they don't ever have any primaries, which gives them the ability to spend all of their money. Nancy Pelosi's PAC to interfere with all of the other people's things
That's
too.
Absolutely right.
And Thomas, just let us know when you, oh, we've got him. That was
all
great.
Right.
Okay. We're pleased to have with us Robert Marks. He is a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Baylor University. He's got a great new book out, The Non-Computable You, about artificial intelligence. Robert, hey, thank you for your time.
Welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be with you.
So we usually talk a lot about politics, and I'm sure we'll get there with you. But I saw read about your book right after I was reading about this Google whistleblower in the Daily Mail, mm-hmm. who was saying that Google has AI that has become sentient. He swears it. And then your book is like, no, probably not. But did you see the article of the story I'm talking about?
Yes, I did. And there's so many ways to deconstruct that story. It's amazing. Yeah, no, there's no sentience there. There's a lot of hype, and that occurs with AI a lot.
Yes. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your book?
And about yourself.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. The book is called Non-Computable You, and the basic premise is a pushback from all of the hype that we hear about artificial intelligence. We hear that it's going to take over the world. It's going to be like in The Matrix or The Terminator, where Skynet becomes conscious and begins to wipe out humanity. And that of course, is science fiction. It turns out that don't get me wrong, artificial intelligence is incredible, and what it is doing is just jaw-dropping. But there are certain brick walls that artificial intelligence will never go through, and that is things which are non-computable. Now, what is non-computable? Well, it turns out we've known since the 1930s that there has been things in computer science which are not computable. I can give you a number of examples of things which you can't compute. So this introduces the question, are there things about people, you and me, that are non-computable, that cannot be replicated by artificial intelligence? Because, of course, artificial intelligence is generated by computers, and something has to be computed in order for you to do something with it. So, the obvious ones are like love, compassion, empathy, anger, and things of that sort that artificial intelligence will never do. But I think even more importantly, the things that it will never do is be creative, be sentient, or understand what it is doing. Understanding, it can add the numbers 12 plus 15, but it doesn't understand what the numbers 12 and 15 are. And it's also one of the weaknesses of the Google sentience idea, is the idea that it can't understand. It doesn't understand what it's doing.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. Is it because you see, well, for instance, I saw there was an ad for the metaverse, right? What used to be Facebook is now Meta. And it was kind of funny because it was showing this doctor doing something in virtual reality. It said, someday a doctor will be able to practice as much as they want before they actually operate in a real person. I'm like, well, that already happens. I mean, they talked about all these things. Someday students will be able to meet in the metaverse and not in person. I'm like, well, that already happened as my son is playing Oculus Quest.
So let me ask you, how did human beings evolve so they could love, hate, and all the emotions? Obviously.
Well, that gets into the theology of things, which we can talk about if you like.
Sure,
but I will tell you that there is an artificial intelligence church, and this is based around, if you will, the area of scientism, materialism, if you will, that believes that everything has to have a scientific explanation. And we have, for example, artificial intelligence saying that we will be able to upload ourselves into a computer and have eternal life. And I think that theology, Judeo-Christian theology, has pointed to ways to have eternal life for a long time. That, by the way, will never happen, because the only thing that you can upload to a computer is the computable part of yourself. And
right.
That part of yourself is probably pretty boring. So that's one of the aspects. Artificial intelligence says that someday there will be artificial general intelligence, which writes better and better software that gets smarter and smarter and smarter, and eventually will generate will generate a superintelligence. And again, in theology, we've known about superintelligence for a long time. That would be God. Now, interestingly, there was a guy in California. His name was Lewandowski, and he was this wunderkind that did self-driving cars. And he founded an AI church. And he was very serious about it. He says, we're going to have a gospel, and this gospel is going to say that we are going to create artificial intelligence, which will be our Godhead. And he even submitted papers to the IRS to try to get tax exemption, because that's the first thing you always do when you find found a church, right, is try to get tax exemption. But the story about this guy is really interesting, because he worked for Uber. And that, no, he worked for Google. Google had a self-driving car unit called Waymo, and he went to work for Uber. And before he went, apparently he copied bunches and bunches of files that he took with him. And so his church, even though he had a church, that church had nothing like the Ten Commandments. There was a do not steal commandment that he was required to follow. So he was put on trial for this. And the judge says, this is one of the biggest intellectual theft things that I've ever seen. And he was fined big bucks. He was sued by Google, eventually disbanded his church. And I don't know what he's doing today, but he's probably not too happy. He did have to declare bankruptcy after a while.
What about this?
So it is interesting, but yeah, we have a theology that actually is developed around artificial intelligence.
What about how close can it get, though? In other words, as you said, there's certain things it can't do, but is it or can it get to the point where, at least in a casual conversation, you might not be able to tell, or how can you tell?
Well, that's part of the Google story, isn't it, about this engineer that came out and said, this thing is sentient. Unfortunately, what he didn't do is look behind the curtain at what made it look like it was sentient. The designers of this had the distinct goal of making it sentient, and they used a lot of so-called crowd workers to actually ask and answer questions in an empathetic manner. They used natural word processing in order to grab all of this empathy out of it and put into the artificial intelligence. But significantly, that artificial intelligence doesn't understand what it's doing. There's a short parable called the Chinese Room, put forth by a philosopher named John Searle. And Searle didn't know Chinese. That's the reason he placed himself in this Chinese room. And in this Chinese room, he was sitting, and people would come up and they would slip little sheets of paper asking questions in Chinese of John Searle. Well, John Searle would look at this note. He had a bunch of file cabinets. He went over to the file cabinets and he began to sort through them until he found a match. Then on the file cabinet was the answer to the question. And so he would write that down in Chinese. He would refile the original one, go back and slip it through the door. Now, externally, it sure looked like John Searle knew Chinese. But no, he was just following an algorithm. He was just following a step-by-step procedure. He had no understanding of what that question was and no understanding of what the answer was. And that's the same sort of thing that's in the background of these so-called chatbots.
What about this? One of the things that I've always kind of worried about it with these big tech companies is, you know, I always like to remember that we're not really the consumer. We're the product, right? And they use all this to get data about us. And aren't they using, and how does this work, a lot of this, the data they get about me, and the choices they make, and what I click on, and et cetera, all of this to try to fuel their artificial intelligence programs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have to remember that artificial intelligence, like electricity, is just a tool. And like any tool, it can be used for bad or it can be used for good. Now, when somebody invades my privacy and starts telling me stuff to buy, by the way, that doesn't always work. I share an Amazon account with my daughter. And I get these little ads saying I should buy diapers and sippy cups and things like that. So they still have
I hate to see the ads she might get.
Exactly. Yeah, probably for all these nerdy books that I buy. that, you know, that happens. That's a way that the tool is used. I had a student, a PhD student, that went for Google, and he quit after a year. He said, "I don't want to spend my career trying to sell people stuff," because that's what he was doing. He was looking at all the data for all of the purchases and all the clicks and things like that. So that's a that's unfortunately the lack of privacy that we have, because we love these tools like Amazon. I use Amazon every day. It's an incredible service. And I long ago decided that I'm sacrificing my privacy in order to get this great service from Amazon.
Well, and as I said, it's my understanding too, that what they do is they gather all of this information, and some of it is used for ads. Some of it's used to kind of boost their artificial, because again, it's like with artificial intelligence, the more information you can program into something, which is, you know, and again, then they're just going to turn it around to try to manipulate us. But how, is there a limit to the success? I mean, have we kind of, because as you said, Amazon ads, they don't really work that well. Is there a limit to this? Are we close to the limit, or where do you, because clearly people are trying to achieve this, you know, artificial intelligence that's sentient, right?
Well, I think this is something which is going to be open to the future. I've heard that places like Facebook, I don't know if it's true, maybe I shouldn't even say it, but they do these tests, and they check out your dopamine hits when you see that people like your page and things of that sort. And then they try to do stuff to get you addicted to it. It's really sad, because there is a kind of a digital sickness that we have. Yeah. And it's nice if we stay away from that digital sickness and go towards a digital wellness. And that's the proper use of artificial intelligence. But unfortunately, that's not where we're going, because we have companies that want to make money. And that's their bottom line.
Right. Well, what do you mean artificial intelligence wellness? Like, you mean just helpful things?
Yeah. Well, you know, it does turn out that if you look at data, now, again, I'm not an expert in this, but I've seen talks on it. But if you look at places like the preponderance of social media, like TikTok or Facebook or some of these other things, and you look at the teenage, for example, suicides, there is a marked increase, because all of a sudden a person's self-worth is folded into how they think people respect and love them on the social media. And that is
That's not a good idea.
Yeah. Oh no.
Not a good idea. But that's what happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a son that teaches high school. He says these kids come in and they're just addicted to Twitter and some of these other social media things.
Right.
They get on their phones and that's their life.
Right. Well, and you know, the one thing too that I get concerned about, and I don't know how this ties in, but it's all quick, like TikTok, which our son uses too, and YouTube. It's like 2 minutes long, right? I mean, do you think, you know, I mean, how does that help with artificial intelligence, having this really short attention span? Or are they kind of not connected?
Well, you talk about short attention spans. I've noticed, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, but I think it is because of media that my attention span is getting shorter. Yeah. They say that it'll approach eventually that of a goldfish. The goldfish has a short attention span of 3 seconds. So I'm not there yet, but I'm kind of taking tiny steps towards it. And so we have to watch out for stuff like that, I guess.
I have to do that.
Well, it's amazing. Your attention span gets shorter, but your tolerance for being on the internet increases.
Looking at boring stuff.
Boring stuff. You know, you all of a sudden, you know, you get up at 7:30, say, "Well, I'll just check a couple things," and all of a sudden it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You're, "Well, whatever.
I haven't done anything useful all day long." Where do you see are some of the? I mean, in a positive way, I agree with you that I think, and particularly for religious reasons or theological reasons, that it's, you know, it's not going to replace us. There's certain things that just can't be programmed. Like you said, it just doesn't understand. And I don't think, like you said, there's this artificial general intelligence that it can start, like, you know, Skynet and the Terminator creating its own. But is there sort of a good way, a brave new world out there that is coming yet, do you think, or no?
Well, I certainly hope not. I certainly hope that we don't lose our humanity, that we maintain our relationship with other human beings instead of artificial sort of entities. So whether Whether the future holds that or not, I don't know, but I certainly hope so. And I think it's a responsibility of parents. I think it's a responsibility of religious organizations, churches and synagogues, for example, to teach the dangers of not being digitally well, of being addicted to this stuff.
Well, the other one is that, you know, the more we delve into quantum mechanics and multi-universes and everything else, the more likely it is that we, you know, we do not understand this world. I suppose Einstein
okay, well,
said, it,
let me take one of those on immediately. There is no multiverse. It is something which is totally hypothetical. There is no physics which underlies the concept of the multiverse. There is something in quantum mechanics called the multiple universe theory, but that's just total conjecture. But yeah, there's no empirical evidence that there is a multiverse. It's something that people just talk about.
But there's no empirical evidence that we know what reality is. And there's a big question, do we know what reality is? And because we certainly do not know reality vis-a-vis a quantum world. And so it gets, you know, Einstein said that, you know, finding a shell on the seashore, and you think you understand everything in the ocean, and you don't. I think we've just begun to understand how our world, our universe, really is ordered, because it's certainly far different than what was thought 100 years ago.
Well, and that goes to your point, too, talking with Robert Marks here, the author of Non-Computable You, about artificial intelligence, that, yeah, if we have really, when you get right down to it, such a limited understanding of how things work, and the artificial intelligence we're creating is only as good as what we're putting into it, there is a certain amount of arrogance on our part that we think we understand as much as we think we do, right?
Yes. Yes, there is a lot of arrogance. You know, as far as the perception of reality, if you go back to Plato, he had this great allegory of Plato's cave, where he said that he's has a bunch of prisoners. They're sitting and they're facing a cave wall. Behind them is reality happening. Now, the prisoners can only face the cave wall. Reality is happening behind them, and behind that is a fire. And all that they can see are these shadows on the wall. And I love that allegory, because that I believe explains our perception of reality. It's never going to be perceived unless we're informed, unless we're informed otherwise. Because he also has one of the prisoners that goes out, and this is really interesting. He had one of the prisoners go out and experience reality, and then he came back and he tried to explain it to the other prisoners, and none of the other prisoners believed him. So even if somebody has a corner on an idea of reality, sometimes it's a hard thing to get through.
Absolutely.
Well, so where can people find your book? It sounds so interesting.
It does.
And I'm glad to sort of see, because I love the Terminator, and I'm like, oh no, are we going there? And it sounds like which common sense just sort of tells you there's certain things that, you know, that you can't program in. And so that's reassuring to know. But where can people find your book and find out more about the things that you write and do?
Well, just like everything else, my book is available on Amazon.com.
Yeah, of course.
Buy it there, like you can buy anything else in the world. It's available currently in print form and an electric book, Kindle, if you will. It will be coming out soon in an audio book also. It's written so that it can be read and understood. My other books I've written, they have lots of equations in it, but I think it was Stephen Hawking. They said when he wrote his book, every equation that he put in it would reduce the sales by a half. So I have put no equations in my book at all. And it's written hopefully in a way that communicates very clearly about the limits of artificial intelligence and the great things that it can do, but also the brick walls that it will never go through also. We are not computable.
All right. Good to hear.
That's the bottom line. That's the takeaway.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Oh, Chuck, Julie, it was great to talk to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. That's Robert Marks, his book, Non-Computable You, about artificial intelligence, on Amazon. Yeah, it was kind of interesting after I read that guy from Google's like, oh, no, it's sentient. And then Google freaked out, not because they thought the guy was lying. They just didn't want anyone to think they had gone that far. So who knew? But a part of me was like, I don't know. That seems like a kind of a stretch there.
Right.
So that's just kind of interesting. What do we have? Comments here we can read. I have a friend who's, wait, where are we going? Let's see. Oh, my friend asked me why I was whispering. They're listening. She laughed. Siri laughed. Alexa laughed. That's right. They're all listening to us all the time. It is concerning. Again, we are the product there. That's going to kind of wrap it up for us for today.
But Wednesday is going to be a great show because it's all the primaries will be in. We'll hope to have some of the winners, which we hope are grassroots people that you've heard on our program. But you never know. And you can't trust the election anyway. So,
we're going to get banned again. I think this is going to be, and you know, Jenna Griswold notwithstanding, hopefully we know by Wednesday afternoon what some of the results are, right? Yeah, and it's going to be very interesting, and it could be very interesting to see whether, because you know, if like the Rhinos win, they're going to be all over us saying unity. It's going to be very interesting to see what their reaction is if the Greg Lopez is Tina Peters and Ron Hanks of the world, and Lori Sainz
won't be unified.
I'm guessing they won't unify. We could double, we could bet on that. We could call Vegas and put some odds on that. Hey, thank you to everybody on Zoom.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you to the great guys.
And Robert Marks is his name.
Robert Marks.
He's great. I thought he was great.
And the great guys at BBS Radio. We will see you all on Wednesday.
Take care.